also to retain some announcements here. So normally this happens in church, here's in my knowledge. Prepared several months ago a very lengthy paper evaluating the role on occasion of holy men in Islam. Or there are different terms used in the Arabic or Iranian world. Iranians are Islamic but not Arabs. You should know that. The Iranians are Indo-European speaking people. Arabs are a Semitic speaking people. The distinction is language, not religion. He pointed out that there were great periods in history in which a holy man or a Mahdi would play a very significant political role, prove a significant impact in the realm of religion. And he foresaw, in evaluating the material, that it would be difficult to understand the tremendous role of the Arabs solely on the basis of economics and money from oil. In terms, their attitude toward the state of Israel, without a holy man or holy men, Mahdis or other terms that may be used, leading and inspiring and influencing the people. I sat on the document for some time. He asked me, that's a figurative expression, and he asked for it back, which I did do this past week. Mr. Stump did say in the paper that there was every reason to see such a man rising soon in the Institute. I chose to detain two announcements here. So normally, it has this church here, to my knowledge, prepared several months ago a very lengthy paper evaluating the role on occasion of holy men in Islam. Or there are different terms used in the Arabic or Iranian world. Iranians are Islamic but not Arabs. You should know that. The Iranians are Indo-European speaking people. Arabs are a Semitic speaking people. The distinction is language, not religion. Pointed out that there were great periods in history in which a holy man or a Mahdi would play a very significant political role, prove a significant impact in the realm of religion. And he foresaw, in evaluating the material, that it would be difficult to understand the tremendous role of the Arabs solely on the basis of economics and money from oil. In terms, their attitude toward the state of Israel, without a holy man or holy men, Mahdis or other terms that may be used, leading and inspiring and influencing the people. I sat on the document for some time. He asked me, that's a figurative expression, that he asked for it back, which I did do this past week. Mr. Stump did say in the paper that there was every reason to see such a man rising soon in the Islamic world. Now, it does appear that the CIA should have read this paper, and they would have realized why one of the most heavily armed kingdoms with the latest sophisticated weaponry collapsed before a holy man in exile. I want you to think about this impact. Remember, Islam arose as a result of a religious the Arabic world, who had no political and no religious might of his own, but created such as a result of those who were influenced. The first great event in the history of Islam was the flight of this man from one city to another in Arabia. The flight is complete. The present significant leader in Iran also fled, in this case, to Paris. And it was as a result of his influence, the continent away. His ideas brought down, contrary to all concepts, American thinking and CIA thinking, the one man who was sure to remain in power in the Middle East. But Mr. Stump presumably is not here, at least I didn't find anybody pointing him out. But I would like to say, even if he's not, it would be very good when you next see him to have a chance to talk with him, and it is possible that he might prepare or pare down this lengthy material for the plain truth. I mentioned also, briefly in the introduction of the Bible study last night, the events in Britain. I would certainly appreciate any comments Mr. John Hopkinson might have, or any of you, in terms of his background as someone from Britain. The evaluation of the British mind at this state of affairs in the very tragic winter that has passed, with a vote of no confidence, now means somewhere in the month of May, there will be a heating up of electioneering and an election. Is that on the 6th of May or the 5th of May? Thank you. Unlike Goliath, he has only five fingers on his hands. That tells me it's the 5th. So, it would be good for those of you, and I think it is important, that we learn to profit by one another's experiences here in the congregation. For that matter, Mr. Brochu, who's from French Canada, might give you an idea. If you'd like to chat with him, the state of mind, both of the Canadians as a whole, and the differing points of view among French Canadians, for they do not all see eye to eye with respect to the question of the independence Quebec. I think we can all profit by and experience and understanding without having to assume that it's only available in the news magazines of the world, because we have people who live and experience these things here. And I, from time to time, when we have students from Southern Africa, bring it to your attention that they're here, and I hope you do. For instance, the Athebalov brothers who were here on one occasion for the seniors who are from Rhodesia, a very responsible family in Salisbury, with a Greek background, would be very able to tell you, because they have had to serve in certain capacity, one of them had to serve in a certain capacity militarily. He did so in a non-combatant capacity, and he could tell you what it is like to live in the country where our brethren also are. We have one more Sabbath before the commencement of the first festival season, the festival season of this year. If we want to leave the next Sabbath also free, if the first McNair is here, or anyone else, I don't know who's assigned, or whether he'll be back. He should be back. In all probability, he would. I'd like to fill in with some material in this connection to help us understand and evaluate parts of the festivals, the history and the life of the church, or why we do things that are uniquely viewed as Jewish, that are far more extensively Jewish. We do things far more Jewish even than Adventists who observe the Sabbath, and they're thought to be Jewish enough for doing so. First, I would like to tell you recently of a letter I received in response to another subject altogether. Presumably a woman who was a co-worker read in the January Good News the article that I wrote of Peter's vision. She had no criticism to offer on the explanation of Peter's vision. She, however, criticized Mr. Armstrong for allowing an article like this, which was so clearly slanted and neglected all the other verses of the Bible, which, in fact, in her mind, presented an exactly opposite conclusion. What I noted in her thinking was something very simple. She found nothing that she could point out that was, in fact, a clearly erroneous theological conception in the explanation offered on Peter's vision regarding unclean meats and what that vision meant. She presumed that however obvious that was, which it was so obvious that she had to call the article slanted, which means presenting only one side, that she reasoned that somehow other verses of the Bible should nullify what is clearly stated here. And I also used for support the evidence of the prophets who speak of a future time about all those who in the past have indulged in unclean meats. This leads to the conclusion that it is very common for the human mind, however clear one or two or three scriptures may be, to clearly lay aside that which is obvious in order to do something that you yourself want to do that is contrary to Scripture, and you choose some other verses of the Bible that may be obscure. For instance, we turn to Colossians 2:16 regarding holy days, new moons, and the Sabbaths of God every week. And by drawing certain conclusions from a verse that is just a passing thought, it is assumed that the whole practice of the law, if you please, the social and religious customs of the nation and the Church of Israel pertaining to the holy days could be nullified by this one verse. But this is the kind of thinking that, in fact, underlies the basic concepts, if you please, of the Christian world around us. Now, Colossians 2:16 is not a decision in which the apostles assembled and drew conclusions, as they assembled and drew conclusions in Acts 15 about circumcision. But even there, most people fail to realize that the apostles in Acts 15 did not even take up the question of whether circumcision should cease among the Jews. It was taken for granted that the law was not here requiring any change. Jews who are so born are expected to be circumcised. The question was whether the Gentiles also should. For the letter which was sent out was not addressed to the Jewish brethren in Jerusalem or to any cities of Judea, but was delivered to those that were scattered abroad in the Greek-speaking world to which Paul ministry. So very often it's easy to take certain things for granted. In fact, this woman who wrote the letter whatever is not commanded in Acts 15 is somehow not to be done. Now, I merely pose the question, if all you must do in life as a Gentile are only, are only four things. You mustn't commit fornication, that's that illicit sexual relationship. You must not eat meat that has been strangled or offered to an idol or which has blood in it. But all other things that you can conceive of are permitted, then clearly there was no reason for all this New Testament. The issues addressed in that chapter are very simply stated. Do Gentiles living outside of Judea have a responsibility to observe all of the tenets of the law of Moses pertaining to the sacrifices of the altar, the washings, and circumcision, which you would not, which would be required before you even could approach the altar? Or are these things pertaining to the temple unnecessary? Paul's conclusion was that, and the apostles, that for the Gentiles, it was not necessary that those ceremonies which pertain to the altar and the temple are fundamental to Christianity. In other words, Christianity did not have to have the altar and the temple. But do not forget, was their conclusion, that in laying aside the requirement for Gentiles to pursue the rituals involved in the ceremonies of the temple stated in the law of Moses, that this does not give you the liberty now to freely sit in an idol's temple and eat meat with its blood, meat that is where the animal was strangled, or freely eat meat offered to an idol, or involve yourselves in sexual promiscuity in the various religious forms of worship in the temples of your country. And that is the issue. The issue was not holy days, the issue was not tithing, the issue was not Sabbath, the issue was not murder, the issue was not childbearing, the issue was not stealing, the issue was not lying, the issue was nothing else but that. And yet there are people who completely misunderstand meaning of the Bible by drawing conclusions from the obscure in order to bash the plain and the simple and the straightforward evidence of Scripture. So much so that about 2 years ago, I deliberately asked Wilbur Berg, who spoke to you now, on the subject that I asked him to pray about at the Passover. I deliberately asked him to offer the prayer over the bread, because he understands what he's doing when he does it. And I knew there would be repercussions, because there were those in the ministry who did not understand what they were doing when the bread was broken. If not the next morning, at least one or two days later, there were those who would like to have removed him from employment in this work for the prayer that he offered that Passover evening. It shows you what can happen in the thinking of individuals who see what God is not doing through them, and therefore draw conclusions as to what God doesn't do. Now that's reasoning, of course. If God doesn't heal any longer through you, then it must be because He doesn't heal. Or is there something about the you that's the problem? But that was never addressed. I'm going to interrupt a moment because I have seen someone in the audience here who I haven't seen in a long time. A woman who has endured many things, who is back from the state of Missouri. Many of you may remember Mabel Gordon. Some of you do not. Would you make yourself visible? Really visible. Thank you. Mabel Gordon, the woman who has endured many things and understands the subject that we happen to be speaking about. Because she's helped many in grave illnesses and herself has endured much. I normally expect her to attend another congregation, and it's a pleasure to see her here. The subject that I want to deal with today, I would draw to your attention very simply that there is, for those of you who know the history of the Church of God in the last 200 years, a clear distinction in the spiritual state of mind between those who were called the churches of God, Seventh Day, or what other terms may be added, from which this work grew, and the worldwide Church of God. There are two basic distinctions. The churches of God prior to the period of 1934 did not observe any of the festivals of God but the Sabbath only, except for a few individuals and what was called the Lord's Supper, sometime on the 14th day, first month of the let's say the sacred year or the beginning of spring. The annual festivals, Passover, in the full sense of the word as we understand and practice it, the days of unleavened bread, Pentecost, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the eighth day, were not part of the practice of the church. And that church is, to this day, one which has no fundamental conception of the nature of the world tomorrow, or what it means to truly be born of God, or what the state of conversion is. They are spiritually weak, and in terms of doing a work, the great issue that divided the congregation at Eugene, Oregon, which was the mother church of the worldwide Church of God as it now is whether or not the festivals of God should be observed by New Testament Christians. The unique thing is to know that our understanding of so many topics and our understanding and grasp of the Bible and what it is that Mr. Armstrong explains and Mr. Rader helps interpret conversations when Mr. Armstrong is not publicly speaking can only be understood by what is revealed through the festivals of God. This church could not be and would not be what it is if this church ceased to observe the festivals. There are those who were among us and are not now among us who assume that all the evidence that I will show you, but much more that we won't take time for, has no meaning, and some false explanation of Acts 15 should be used, and that is that whatever was not required there is what Christians ought not do. And since the holy days were not mentioned because they were not the issue, you can observe them apart from the temple, they were not an issue, but since they were not mentioned, the reasoning of a few ministers who left, tragically, was that there is no requirement to observe festivals that God hallowed forever. And long as day and night and month and year occur. It is important then to recognize that if you were to take the handbook of denominations by Frank Mead or any write-up of the churches of God for the last 100 years, you would discover that the distinction between this work and all of the other branches of the churches of God that keep the Sabbath, and I'm talking about Pentecostal groups, is essentially focused on the holy days, and it is within those days that a grasp of the plan of God is so clearly laid out that we understand what other branches of the churches of God do not. And now, the Bible did prophesy that there would be people in the last century, and even now, who would let these things die. And they would be neglected and forgotten. The result is that such churches have a name. We have defined it in Revelation chapter 3. A name that they are alive, they're the church of God, but that they are otherwise spiritually dead. We should recognize, just by experience alone, that when God purports significant changes in human experience in His church and among His people, such times of reformation very greatly involve the restoration of the festivals of God that have fallen into neglect, which is why the state of affairs. First, let me explain. When the festivals were given, they were not given to Adam, or to Abel, or to Enoch, or to Noah, or to Abraham, or to Isaac, or Jacob, or Joseph. There is no place anywhere in Scripture where you will find that a particular day is defined as hallowed time. These men went through experiences, but they were individuals in their generation. The first time we have any hallowed period apart from the Sabbath day, which is what every man needs within a week's time, is in Exodus 12. Now, you're all familiar with the fact, or should be, that this is also the first time that God deals with a large number of people in the church. Now, in the translations of the Bible, we normally find that in rendering the Old Testament, the word congregation, not church, is used. In rendering the New Testament, for the same general word, the word church is used, not congregation. This is just circumstantial. It might have been better if it had been avoided. On the other hand, it does distinguish the congregation of Israel, which was a physical nation, a church and a nation, from the church of God, which is a spiritual nation. Now, in that physical nation, there were some spiritual people, the prophets, and some kings, priests. And in the church of God, there are some carnal people. That is, they're not really a part of the church, they're only among them. But those two periods one wave loaf was offered on the day of Pentecost, and the seven separate candlesticks that pertain to the history for nearly 2,000 years of the churches of God, the other wave loaf offered on the day of Pentecost, do distinguish two major periods of time, focusing in also on the literature of the Old Testament and the literature of the New. The literature of the Old Testament is not for that church, but by that church or its leaders under the Lord, Yahweh, for all time. And the literature of the New Testament is not just for the church, but by that church for people for all time, and that's why it is preserved here. Here. I happen to have the two Bibles, one is the Old Testament, the other is the New. Now, when we open up to Exodus chapter 12, we find for the first time a significant presentation of the church as the congregation. And when introducing the congregation here, the first thing we notice is that the congregation has something to do collectively. Preservation of a calendar, observance of Passover and unleavened bread. Now, when Abel lived, he was a singular man, not a church. When Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob lived, they were not what we would call a congregation. They were individuals in their generation. God chose that when, he made this decision himself, that when we have a large number of people, scores, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, or as Israel then was, over a million, there is a necessity of something more than a weekly day of rest that everybody ought to share in. There is a necessity of collectively doing certain spiritual things together as a group that holds the group together all the time, not merely the rest of the Sabbath day, because every local congregation may assemble and there is nothing that links the congregation to the higher level. If all we did was to assemble on the Sabbath day, we would merely be assembling with ourselves. But the festivals were made to bring congregations together and to bring groups of people in large numbers together to make them aware of a higher responsibility. And so when God chose to deal with a congregation, the first thing he chose to do was to explain the annual festival of unleavened bread, the sacrifice of the Passover. He did not, at that time, explain the other holy days, as I'll mention in a moment. He starts out in Egypt with these, because that's what they needed to know as a group in Egypt. They had a purpose to play. Now what you discover is that these festivals, often in the Old Testament period of time, represent memorials of events that happened to the congregation of Israel or the church that God was then using, made up of the descendants of the patriarch Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. They were his descendants. God could have chosen to call out, since we have some who are Thai here, he could have chosen to call the Thais out of China. He could have chosen to call the Greeks out of Scythia, or the Ethiopians out of parts of Egypt. He chose to call the Israelites out of Egypt. That was his choice because he had made a promise to Abraham and to Isaac, and to Israel. And he promised to deal with their children first before dealing with the rest of the human family. Now, this is not the day in which I will explain the meaning of these days, but I want you to see the nature of these days with respect to the state of the church as we move through time. After the children of Israel observed the festival, Passover, the festival of unleavened bread, you have the unique situation in which, by observing these days properly, they were delivered. We understand that if the children of Israel had not been protected by the blood of the slain lamb, the firstborn of Israel would have perished, as did the firstborn of Egypt. If the children of Israel had not been assembled, that night could be much remembered, they would not have left Egypt. They would have remained in slavery. If they had not been, as tradition would seem clearly to indicate, observing the last day of unleavened bread at the shores of the Red Sea, they would not have been there to cross it when it opened. And therefore, the reason why that church existed was because they observed the festival. It may be advisable, therefore, that the reason why we will continue to exist is that we do. And if we were ever not to, there would be no reason for us as a church to exist. And God would have to raise up something else. It was at the foot of Mount Sinai. Children of Israel moved down the Wadi and camped to the northwest. They came down the Wadi southward and camped to the northwest of the mount. And on the southern part of the mount, at its foot, there was a rock from which water flowed to nourish the 12 tribes. And in the third month of the calendar year, God spoke to Moses and said, I want the children of Israel assembled. And so the children of Israel did assemble in an amphitheater area that exists to the east of Mount Sinai so that they could, in a sense, be in a proper position away from the tent area and to see where God would stand